All right. Welcome back, you guys. Thank you so very much for joining me. My name is Swadek Mayanja, but you guys can call me Q, and you are on another episode of the Everyday Hero Show, where I bring to you someone in your life or someone in my life that does amazing things, that does good things, that makes you feel better, but does not get the credit that they deserve. Today we have Tina, from Good Nurse, Bad Nurse, and she's a nurse. I've been on her podcast. She's absolutely fantastic. Tina, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So, Tina, right from the get, I like to just keep it simple. I have you written down origin story. So, who are you? Where are you from? And then how did you get from just a young Tina to Tina RN?
Well, so I went... My name is Tina Vinzant. I live in East Tennessee in Knoxville, and I actually have only been a nurse for 4 years. I graduated in 2015 with my RN, and then in 2017 with my BSN. I went back to school when I was older, so I have children, and they were teenagers and didn't need me as much anymore, and so I, you know, just thought about what I would like to kind of do for myself. And so I decided I wanted to go to school for nursing, and then just started doing that slowly. It took me several years because I just did the prerequisites really, you know, just a little at a time, and then applied to nursing school and, you know, just sort of did the really slow path. And so that's kind of how I got to being a nurse.
So that's super simple, but I want to know really who Tina is. Now, Tina, all right, you don't know who someone is unless you know where they're from. I want to know parents. How many siblings did you have? What was that life like when you were young? And when you were younger, did you always know nursing, or was nursing something that just happened?
So I am going to be honest with you. I have a little bit of an unconventional past. It's not. Ooh, okay. So I was raised in foster care for most of my childhood, and then when I was 17, I was kind of on my own, so I had to kind of find my own way. So I had a child at a young age, at 18, and so I was a single mom for a few years, and then I met my husband when I was 21, and then we were married when I was 22, so we've been married ever since then. He adopted my son, and then we had two more children. So that's kind of... I do have connections with some of my siblings, because I have six other siblings from my childhood, but I'm very, very close with my sister. She lives in Indiana, and I'm very close with her and her family, my biological sister. And so I have some connections with some of my other family, but it's, I kind of only really probably consider her really family. It's just, you know, kind of the people that you're closest to. And she's always been there. She's 10 years older than I am, so she remembers when I was born. And she, you know, was always kind of in my life through the years. So, yeah, that was kind of a, you know, sort of like I said, an unconventional childhood. But it has helped me, I think, especially in nursing, just have empathy for all different types of people. And I guess just kind of, you know, when people come in and they have different backgrounds and different stories, I think it sort of helps me to just not judge them based on any of that stuff. And, you know, anybody can be anything they want to be, no matter where they come from.
Oh, my God. See, I got goosies. Wait, Tina, like, so I know you literally just ended that sentence with you shouldn't judge people. I kind of judged you. So I have to say, Tina... Because all I know about you is that you're a superstar nurse, you're a good nurse, bad nurse, all of these amazing things. So I really had you picture perfect. Oh, my God, Tina, that's, wow, that is just wow. I'd love to talk about more of your upbringing, if that's something you're okay with. But if not, I can totally understand, because... That's very personal. Are you okay talking about that?
I don't mind at all talking about it. It's not something that I dwell on or like to. So, in fact, a lot of people, if people that know me listen to this, they're probably going to be a little more surprised because I don't necessarily go around announcing, you know, all of that stuff or talking about it. But I'm not uncomfortable talking about it by any means. I'm not embarrassed by it. I feel like it's made me a stronger person and who I am. I'm the sum of all of my experiences. So I use any of my experiences from my childhood to try to make me a better person, and try to help other people who might be in those same situations.
So, for you, when you think about your childhood, do you remember mainly the foster home, or were you ever at home with your sister, with the family, and then the foster home?
Well, because my sister was 10 years older than me, she had different fathers, she was raised, we were raised in different states. She was raised in Indiana, yeah, and I was raised in mostly the Nashville, Tennessee area. So she would come and visit, but I was pretty much, ties were severed between me and my biological mother when I was, I believe, 5 or 6. I remember that happening. And I was the youngest of her 7 children, and she didn't have any of her other children. I was kind of the last one that was still hanging around, I guess. I don't know. I guess the way it works is if you have children and they get taken away or somehow taken care of by other people, and then you continue to have more children, this was a long time ago, they don't automatically come in and take that child. So I suppose it takes a few years, or like I said, back then maybe it did. So yeah, I was probably 5 or 6, but I do remember her. When I was grown, I went back to find her and sort of developed. She had a lot of mental health issues, which is why she wasn't able to take care of the children that she had. So it took me a long time to process through all of that and not resent, not have bitterness, and finally forgive. It took me a long, long time. But I just, you know, I've worked on it. She died in 2010 when she was 69.
I'm so sorry.
I think she's probably better off, you know, like in a better place, because she was a very, you know, tortured kind of person. So I feel like she's at peace now.
That's really deep. And I have to say, like, that would be probably the most resentful causing situation, like, ever. Like, I think it's super, super self-aware of you, super, super emotionally tough of you for you to do the seeking out, right? So you said you did the seeking out after time passed and after you, you know, took care of yourself. But that's huge. That's huge, Tina. That really is huge. Good for you. So when did you decide? How did you decide nursing was the thing? Because you said you had your kids and you were raising your kids, and you just recently became a nurse. How did that happen? When did it hit you, or did you always have a feeling nursing was the way forward?
I think it's so hard for me to remember that, because it's sort of been a long process of a thought that was always sort of in the back of my mind. Even when I was younger and a young single mother, I kind of felt like I wanted to do that. But it felt impossible then. It just felt like, it probably was. It was not time for me to do that at that time, but it was something I wanted to do. And then when I met my husband, he is sort of a, what am I trying to say? He's like an anchor. So he's a very stable, grounded individual. And so he was just like home for me, you know, like for the first time in my whole life, I had a home with my husband. So, and then he was a father to my son. So we all of a sudden had all the stability, but I didn't need to go to school, because he had a very good job. He was a computer programmer and, just a wonderful provider and a wonderful husband. And so he never expected me to work or needed for me to work or wanted me to, but I wanted to. And so he always supported me that if I wanted to, I could. And then at some point, I think it just became more of an option. Like, the kids were older and it seemed like doable. So it just took time. And at some point I thought, now it could happen. I could start taking classes, and it just, you know, it took a long time, but it finally happened.
I'm really happy for you. I'm super happy you decided nursing, right? But so like when you were doing your prerequisites, it was always, I'm doing these prerequisites to get into the nursing program. Yeah. It was always, I'm going to start going to college for nursing. It was never, maybe I want to be a stewardess, or maybe I want to be a vet, or it was always nursing.
It was. What's funny about that is I'm going to be so honest today. I don't know if I'm going to like hearing this back. But when I first started, I was all gung-ho about doing nursing. And then I took anatomy and physiology and got a B+. And I'm embarrassed to say that, because I know so many nursing students out there are like 4.0, whatever. So I had always been able to take classes and, you know, I never saw school really as a challenge or as, you know, difficult, but I also was older. It had been 15 years or 20, I don't even know how, when I started, that I had even done anything like that. And I think it was really hard for me to get back into it. And so I really kind of shook my confidence, and I decided I wasn't going to go to nursing school, because I thought you had to have perfect grades and straight A's, and I just thought, I can't do this. I'm not going to get in nursing school. Why would I continue on this path? So I stopped, took a semester of like just elective type things. And at some point I was talking to someone and I said something like, well, I always wanted to go to nursing school, but I'm just not smart enough to get into nursing school. And they were just like, really? Because that doesn't, they just kind of, and it was a nurse, and she worked at a school of nursing, and she said, I think you should rethink that. And I was like, but I got a B+ in anatomy and physiology. And she just died laughing.
Tina, I'm telling you, girl, you're something else, Tina. You're something else.
It's funny to me now. Yeah. It is hilarious now when I think about it. Of course, that's silly, course, but I just didn't understand it.
But it's also like the situation, because you haven't been in school in forever, and you came back, and but still, wow, Tina. Yeah, I mean, your expectations for yourself are somewhere through the roof. That's where they are. I just, as a kid, I don't know about the stability situation, but were you a good kid in school, like when you were younger?
I always was just, I don't ever remember it being a struggle. I just always did whatever, you know, I always just did whatever I had to do. I wasn't necessarily a perfectionist or anything like that, but I also didn't have a lot of guidance, and I feel like if I had had a more nurturing environment and an example, I probably would have, but I didn't even know to care about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It just was a school was a non-issue. When you remember studying the Maslow's hierarchy of needs?
Yes,
that
definitely
rang so true to me. But when I learned about that in our psych, you know, nursing psych class, I just remember applying it to myself and thinking about my childhood and how I really wasn't able to flourish because I wasn't getting some of those basic needs met. And so it helped me understand how important it is to give people the opportunity. Everybody needs the opportunity to have those basic needs met. And it's better for society in general if all people are given those basic needs, because then you're going to have a better society. It's going to lift everyone up, because you can't possibly get to the higher level where you're dreaming and you're actually making yourself a better person and focusing on yourself and being better if you're struggling trying to just meet your basic needs. And even as a child, it's like that. You know, the safety and security, I think, is one of them. So, you know, when you're in, some, not all foster cares are like this, and I don't want to start saying anything negative about foster cares, because foster homes, because there are a lot of really wonderful ones, but some of them aren't great. And so at the very least, they can be not nurturing, I guess, you know.
That is fair to say, the very least. I mean, of course, like, obviously, you're a perfect example of someone coming out of foster home and having a wonderful life. But yeah, sometimes it's not all due to the foster home. Do you have any? Because that is so like perfectly like stated, just the way you said it, the higher hierarchy of needs. I mean, you really do need those basics. You need like shelter, you need like food every day, you need to know where your next meal is coming from, so that's not what you're stressing about 24/7, so you can actually do the creative fun things like good nurse, bad nurse, like actually, you know, go on vacation and like try to take care of yourself. So that is super, super important. Okay, so now we're at the place where you're in nursing school, right? You're getting through nursing school. Was nursing school a breeze for you? Did you have any bumps and bruises? Did the B plus in anatomy and physiology really mean something? Or did you get by with flying colors?
I did well in nursing school. I worked really hard for it, though. I wasn't like I was one of these people that didn't have to study. I studied all the time. But again, my husband was very supportive. I didn't have to work while I was in nursing school. He took care of a lot of the things that I would have taken care of before. He really just kind of picked up any slack that I was leaving, because I was studying from the time I woke up until the time I went to bed. I studied all the time. So I did well. But I worked hard for it also.
And so the thing is, I know so many people where nursing is a second career, or like they're in a situation like you where they just raise a kid and then they decided that nursing is going to be something that they do, but they get into nursing school later. Were you one of many that were in that situation, or were you the only person in your class, in your graduating class, that was second career type nursing?
I think that I was one of many, because there were a lot of younger people, but there were also several like me who, and at different stages, there were some older, some younger, yeah, but all different ages, because I think that associate's degree program, that it's just the RN and the 2 year, it's really a 3 year because you have to do your prerequisites, but
preach, like, bro, preach. Don't lie to these nursing students.
I know it. I was like, I should have just done that BSN. Why did I do this to myself? But you know, I digress. So, but yeah, there are a lot more people, I think, that go back and do that associate's degree program as they're older, because it does seem more doable than trying to do it all at once. So because I did that program, I think there probably were more people like me, and it was a really good mix.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Yep. All right. So beautiful. So finally, we get to the place where you are a nurse. So, Tina, you're a nurse now, right? You finally graduated nursing school. Where do you start off as nursing? As a brand new newbie nurse, what are your nursing dreams at the time? Are you thinking you're going to be in oncology? Are you going to do L&D? Like, what was you as a brand new nurse thinking? And what was your first job in that whole situation?
Well, when I did my clinicals and labor and delivery and those type, you know, mother baby, I knew I didn't want to do that. And then when I did my clinicals at a pediatric hospital, I knew I didn't want to do that. So there are things that I'm a very deep feeler. So my emotions run very, very deep, and I have a hard time separating sometimes especially if I relate too closely with someone. So children, I want to associate them with my children, and I just get too emotionally involved. So I was like, I can't do that. And then mothers having babies at a young age, I can't, it's just too familiar. I guess I'm too close to that situation, especially if they're struggling and I see that they're not in a good place. It's too hard. It would be too hard for me to not take that home and worry about it. And so I thought, that's probably not a healthy place for me to go emotionally. I probably need to be. And so I really saw myself working with more of an older population, not necessarily just geriatrics, but just in adult medicine, you know, adult care. And so I started out at a small hospital working in a step-down cardiac unit. And it was interesting. It was a 5-to-1 ratio. A lot of people coming in with chest pain and then put on heparin drips and coming in with AFib with RVR and needing cardioversions and that sort of thing. There was just a lot of cardiac, and it was really fun and interesting, a lot to learn. But the, let's see, without, I don't want to, again, I don't want to be negative about anyone. And I know that someone listening to this would know what hospital I'm talking about. So I just want to be careful, but I wasn't comfortable with how I felt like I was able to take care of patients at that hospital. And so I contacted someone that was at the level one trauma center that I work, where I work now. And I just said, you know, I really would love to work there. And they were like, we would love to have you come on, apply, you know? And so I only was at that other hospital like 3 months when I knew I needed to get out of there and go somewhere else. And I've been there at this other hospital ever since. And it's like a progressive critical care, progressive care floor. It's step down. It's 3-to-1 ratio. The patients are very acutely ill, very, you know, can't have the potential to be unstable. So it's very, just always something going on.
Yeah, no. So a million questions just has rained down upon me while you were talking, right? So let me just start by congratulating you, right? Because I don't know if this is just something that just comes natural to you, but there are so many nurses. The first job I took, I didn't feel totally comfortable there too, right? Like, to say the least, and I'm doing the same thing you are. You don't want to be negative about the place. It could also be just because I was a new nurse, but whatever the situation is, I wasn't comfortable there too, right? I did what I think most nurses do. I stayed there much longer than I feel like I should have before moving, but I also was in your situation where I only had my associate's degree, and all the places I wanted to go were hospitals, and here in Mass, they were super strict about you need to be in an RN program, or you need to have, I mean, you need to be in an RN to BSN program, or you need to have your BSN. So literally the day, the second, the hour, I was like halfway through my RN to BSN program, like, infinite amounts of applications to every hospital I possibly could. And then finally, when I got in, thanks to a friend, you know, and they were like, yeah, you should come work here. And like, finally, I am very happy at the hospital I work at now. But I just wanted to just congratulate you, because I see way, way, way too many nurses stay in places they feel uncomfortable at. They feel like it's unsafe. They feel just uneasy about the situation. And number one, it's unsafe. It really is unsafe. So if you can't make that issue known to the manager and get it fixed, you need to move on so you are safe and you feel comfortable and you're not like anxiety filled every single day. And then on top of that, if you do decide to stay and you are dealing with all this anxiety every day, that is like just burnout waiting to happen. So just, Tina, it just makes me really happy when I hear nurses say, I felt uncomfortable or I didn't feel safe and I moved and I made the decision. Because as a nurse, you literally can get a job any single place in like the world. Forget about America. Forget about where you live. Forget whatever the situation. Even if there's no hospital, you can work at a VNA. You can work at a clinic. You could do anything until you can find that place where you feel safe and challenged and all of that stuff all put in together. So I love the fact that you did that. Like, that just makes me so, so, so happy. It just makes me really, really happy that that's how you went about it, right? But, so, when you first started, what was the stuff that was most difficult to you specifically, Tina, as a new nurse, right? And you said this is 4 or 5 years in, right? Yeah, so I feel like you're still in that, you know, you finally get in your groove, but you've been at this new job much longer because you were only at the first one for 3 months. But what was super difficult for you as a new nurse? Or what did you really, just dislike as a new nurse?
I can tell you without any hesitation whatsoever, my least favorite thing in the whole world as a brand new nurse was handoff. It was trying to hand off the patient to the next nurse. It made me an absolute wreck and caused so much anxiety. It's terrible. And I've talked about it many times on Good Nurse, Bad Nurse. We've done special episodes on it. I've done a video on it because it's my absolute pet peeve, and I'm going to make it my one of my goals and one of my missions is to change the world of nursing and to try to get people to be more supportive of each other and to everyone, not just new nurses, but new nurses especially, to give people latitude and grace and, you know, treat people the way you would want to be treated. So when I say all that, I mean, for those of you who haven't, I have a lot of, I don't know about you, Q, but I have a lot of nursing students that listen to my podcast, and they message me all the time, and they're so excited. I understand that because I know how exciting it was in nursing school, and you just want to talk about it all the time. So to hear someone talking about nursing, I would have loved to have had something like that when I was in school. Yes. So I get it. Yes. I get the excitement. So if you're listening and you are a nursing student, I don't want this to sound discouraging. I want you to be the change is what I want you to do. Okay. I want you to not be like this. And I also want you to know that not every situation is like this, but one person can cause so much anxiety. It's unbelievable. So don't be that one person. But what I'm talking about is you spend 12 hours at the bedside doing everything you possibly can. You do your assessments at the beginning of your shift, head to toe, chart everything. You keep an eye on your pay. You give all your meds on time, and in a perfect world, and you're watching your patient, you're noticing changes on telemetry, you're noticing changes in breathing and respirations, and you're just flying, like just doing great. And then you try to your best to prepare your patients for the handoff, and I do that by checking my lines, making sure fluid bags are full, making sure new setup for, like, we use the big 60cc cylinder, 60cc syringe with a cylinder, like for PEG tubes, and we get one a new one every shift. I go ahead and put that at the bedside, things like that, just to try to prepare for the next person so they can have a little bit better shift. And then you go to give handoff, and that person notices one thing that you forgot and says something about it and makes kind of a big issue. And I'm not talking about a safety issue. Of course, that needs to be pointed out, but even that, there's a professional way that you can do it that's not degrading to someone. You know, like if someone has, for instance, someone one time had
Tina,
are you there?
Hello?
Q?
Tina? Can
yes.
you hear me? Okay, I'm sorry. It just the screen froze and I couldn't hear you for a second. But yes, so I can hear you now perfectly. So there's a professional way to do that. And if someone has, you were about to say.
So like if someone has made some sort of an error. Okay. For instance, one time when I was new, someone showed me how to hook up the suction to an NG tube. And the way that they showed me how to hook it up to the wall suction, because I went and asked someone how to do it, and this person showed me how to do it, and it was wrong. I had hooked it in. That person showed me the wrong way, which also taught me a lesson, and that's go look up the procedure on the best thing to do is to go look it up. But then when the next shift came on, that nurse noticed that it was hooked up wrong and was like, kind of made, like, I guess it was sort of like a negative experience. It could have been a teaching moment, like, oh hey, I know you probably didn't realize this, but this actually goes here, and this is a vent, this is not supposed to be plugged in here, that kind of thing. And exactly. It could have just been a, you know, it didn't have to be a negative experience. Instead, I still remember that moment to this day because it was so impactful, because it hurt my feelings the way that person handled it. And I went home feeling like a horrible person and a horrible nurse because I made one mistake, and I did the best I could, but it doesn't matter. I beat myself up for, you know, over that. And so to me, you know, you ask what is the one thing that was the most challenging thing for me as a new grad and a new nurse. And experienced nurses will tell new nurses, well, this, don't take that. Just tell that, stand up to that nurse. Don't let it bother you. When you're a new grad, you can't do that. You don't have that skill yet. You haven't developed enough confidence to stand up to someone.
Yes. Okay. So I'm sorry about all of this on your guys' end that are watching this. It's just some internet issues, some computer issues, technology issues. Tell me when it's not a goddamn issue, right? It's supposed to be here to help us, but sometimes I feel like we cater to it.
Yes.
So that was, I think, a good ending to the last conversation we were just having about giving report and why that's a frustrating situation for most nurses, especially when you're new, because you just feel the pressure that you need to be perfect all the time. You don't out there. You don't. But like you said, well said, there is a way to tell someone you did something wrong. There's a way to tell someone, I like to receive my information this way. I don't want too much of the history when you give me a report. I don't want all of the details of every bruise on the patient's body. There's a way to say that in a kind way. There's a way to say that, you don't have to tell me this every time you give me a report. Or you don't have to be mean. You really don't have to be mean. And it's such an anxiety-filled situation all the goddamn time. I don't know if you guys do bedside reporting.
We do.
Okay, good. So you know, like, on top of all of this anxiety you feel about giving the right information, you're inside the patient's room. The patient's listening to you. The family member's listening to you. Mm-hmm. So if the nurse is going to be, excuse my French, but a dick while you guys are in the room, it's not helping anybody. It really just not isn't. Mm-hmm. It's not helping anybody. It's just not. But I have to follow up on that question, Tina. How have you gotten better at giving report? At making, you know, helping other people when they mess up during report, or haven't something like an oopsie daisy like you had with the suction, how have you gotten better with that? And what would you like to see moving forward? Because you say you want to make a change. What kind of change would you like seeing moving forward?
Well, what I have tried to do over the past several years, and I'm a team leader now, so I don't actually take my own patients usually. Every now and then I'll take a patient, but I don't get hand off in that way. The team leader hands off to the team leader, so we're kind of handing off report to for the whole floor, so it's a little different. But what I've tried to do is, during handoff, number one, if I see anything that I feel like needs to be addressed, if it's something that I can do, I'm just going to do it. I don't feel a need to point it out to that person. Unless if it's a safety issue, I'm going to wait until we're not at the bedside and then say something to them in a nice way. And what I usually try to do is sort of sandwich it in with, first of all, if there's any way I can come up with a story of something that I've done personally, I'll go ahead and say, you know, I've done this before, or one time I did this, this, or this. So they understand that I'm not coming from a place where I'm trying to say I don't make mistakes, but I really want you to know the right way to do this. And I want, for the safety of the patient, from, you know, going forward, this is the best way to handle this. And I totally get why you did it that way. I, you know, that sort of thing. It's just, there's a way to admit your own faults, admit your own weaknesses, and then say, you know, in this case, I've noticed this is something I know that you don't know. We all know something everybody knows something that somebody else doesn't know that we could share. And if we just look at it that way and don't be offended if someone's trying to correct something, that's not good either. Be teachable. Yes. You know, want to be teachable. But then if you don't do it in a negative way, then it's better for the patient. It's better for the nurses. Handoff, that stress, I feel like that is a huge reason why nurses don't want to work at the bedside. It's there's pay, there's the pay issue, there's the way that they're treated by patients and families, and the ratios obviously are a huge deal. I do believe that interpersonal interaction within handoff and you know, coworkers is also a big part of it.
And I agree with you 100%. And then moving from that to anything positive, is there a favorite thing that you have about nursing? Is there something that you just, is it just nursing in general? Like, is there a thing that just makes you go back to work every single day?
That's so hard. I don't know if there's any one particular thing. I think that probably the most rewarding thing about nursing, and the days that I leave feeling the best about myself and kind of feeling like I'm really glad that I went into nursing and that I get to do this, are the days when I feel like I made a difference in someone's life. So I feel like I saw something that no one else has seen, that I recognized something that was new. It saw a change in my patient and caught it early and early enough and pointed it out to the provider and said, this is going on and I don't this is not, they were not like this before. And then the provider steps in and says, oh, well then let's do this, this, and this. And then it turns into a good thing for the patient. So that's such a rewarding feeling. There's nothing like it in the world when you leave there feeling like you made a big difference for patients.
I mean, there really isn't something like it. It's an amazing feeling. And my first job was at a rehab. We used to do this thing where they would play music when the patient was discharged. Right, it was a very small rehab, so they would play music. And I think it was like Survivor or like, you know, some like really corny song. Mm-hmm. And I swear to you, I mean, it would be like once a week I would tear up because these patients, they would come in, and I worked on a brain injury and brain trauma floor, and these patients would come in, they can't move anything on their left side, they can't move anything on the right side, they can't speak, they can't eat, you know, like literally, like they normal one day, stroke happens, brain injury happens, they're like, they can't move on their own without having two nurses next to them. And then they would leave the facility with the music playing, and they would just have the function of their right arm, and they don't have anything in their right leg. And I'm just like, oh, like it's insane, right? Like, yeah, it's such a good feeling. It really is such a good feeling. There's nothing that compares. But Tina, so now I want to move on to the stuff that your extracurriculars, the stuff that you do outside of nursing, right? Because I feel like in your progression in 4 or 5 years of nursing, you have progressed really efficiently, right? So you started like 4 years ago, and now you're already a team leader, like, and you're doing this good nurse, bad nurse outside of nursing. Is this like the projection, like you saw yourself? Because I know nurses that's been nurses for like 45 plus years, and they are bedside nurses. They do not want to change positions. They're like set, like that's it. Like, is this your, like, was this part of the plan, or did it just happen?
It definitely wasn't part of the plan. I didn't really see myself in the charge nurse role, which is what a lot of people are familiar with that title more than team leader. Yeah, it's the same thing. I never saw myself in that role. And then my manager sort of encouraged me to think about it. And I started thinking about it, like, and I think I had an opportunity where I had to be the team leader one day. And then I realized it's not as intimidating as I thought it was. You don't have to necessarily have all the answers, because I think that was one thing that I thought, what, you have to have all the answers, but you don't. Yeah. You just have to know how to get them and be resourceful. And so, no, I didn't see myself doing that. But then when an opportunity came up, I thought, well, why not take it and just see how I do? And if I don't like it, I can always go back to the other or do something else. But I actually do love it, because I love working with nurses, and I love helping nurses. Nurses are just amazing people, and they're so appreciative, and I get to help the patients and nurses also. So I'm helping the patients, and then I'm helping the nurses by, yeah. So it's a wonderful position. I love it.
And it's funny that you say that, because you're right. Like, the thing that causes me the most anxiety is, you know, giving the report and dealing with that situation. But the thing that helps me with all of my anxiety are my coworkers, right? Like, it really is like your coworkers, and it, just like you said, it could just be one nurse can make or break your experience as a nurse, yeah. Your day at work, your just the actual unit, like the vibe, the, you know, the cohesiveness of the entire unit. It only takes really one bad nurse to ruin the entire unit. So I love, if you have good coworkers like I do, it, you know, going into work, taking care of crazy patients, taking care of good patients, but whatever you want to call them, it makes everything a little bit better. Mm-hmm. A lot of bit better. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's talk about good nurse, bad nurse. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know what good nurse and bad nurse, if you are a healthcare provider, if you are a nurse and you don't know what good nurse, bad nurse is, I don't know what you're doing. All right. I think it's fantastic. So why don't you real briefly just tell us what good nurse, bad nurse is, and then tell us how that came to be.
So, well, Good Nurse, Bad Nurse is a podcast that I started about a year ago. It's a combination of true crime, like medical true crime, and also nursing in general. So what I do is I have a guest host on, and we will talk about a good nurse and a bad nurse. So usually the bad nurse, and sometimes it's not a nurse at all. It's sometimes a doctor or a physical therapist or a respiratory therapist, or it could be just someone in the medical field in general who's done something not necessarily related to their job. It may be that they did something in their personal life, but they happen to be in the medical field. So, but it's a true crime story, and we tell the whole story of that event that happened. And I enjoy listening to podcasts, to true crime podcasts, so I just wanted to create something that sort of incorporated that element into it, but then also gave me an opportunity to discuss nursing and the medical field in general, and then use it as an opportunity to sort of bring together nurses and other medical professionals and help with, because while I want nurses to have better relationships with each other, I want that's a goal of mine, is to just continue to foster that idea of we're all part of one big family of healthcare workers, but also the relationships within interdisciplinary relationships. So nurses and pharmacists and nurses and doctors and nurses and respiratory therapists and all of, and everybody with each other, because you know, you in healthcare, you can kind of have that silo effect where you know what you do and you know, you think what you do is the most important thing, but you don't know how to consider what is going on in the pharmacy. What is going on in the pharmacy?
Please let me know.
I'm just kidding. Oh my goodness, it could be one of the most frustrating things, but really, we don't know. We don't work there. We're not pharmacists. We're not pharmacy techs. We don't understand it, and I know that. And I still would get so frustrated when I have an 1800 antibiotic that it's not there. And I'm just
exactly.
Like, why isn't it?
Like, and do I know you not understand?
No, yeah, there's got to be a reason it's not there. And that's what I really would like to do, is to just get these conversations going. That's why I like having different types of medical professionals on Good Nurse, Bad Nurse, so we can talk about that stuff. I want to hear the pharmacist say, I want to hear you say, why in the world you can't have my Merrim down here by 1800?
Please. No. I'm so happy you said that, just because, I thought that was a us issue. This is a worldwide issue.
I know.
We got to talk to these pharmacists, because they, I don't know if they like to just push the right buttons, but bring me the meds, please. All I ask is for the meds to be where they need to be.
I have a feeling it's probably there's probably some staffing issues.
Of course.
It's the way it is all over the hospital, so I try to be patient with people and not, but boy, it can get frustrating when your EMR turns red because your med is late and you don't like giving meds. Who wants to give a med late, you know?
Exactly.
So yeah, that's just part of, that's what Good Nurse, Bad Nurse is. It's discussion. It's, you know, just talking about stuff.
I think maybe Tina here might be a little too modest. I'm telling you guys, if you like any true crime story, you need to listen. Even if you have this, like, it's crazy, because it is all of these stories. Like she said, it's just the person needs to be in healthcare. And if they're in healthcare, check the boxes, check them. We could talk about the crazy, insane stories they have done outside of it. I have been a guest host on Tina's podcast twice. And it is, I'm telling you, I really get into these stories, because the things these people do just blow your mind. Like, yeah. It's like, how is this possible? But it's super interesting. And you got to listen to it. The buildup in the podcast is fantastic. The side conversations that Tina has with her guests are fantastic. It is just the bee's knees, right? But Tina, I gotta know, how long into, because I feel like this podcast is a little, I would say, medium-aged, long-ish running. How long into your nursing career did you decide to start Good Nurse, Bad Nurse?
It's only been around a year. I started it at the end of May last year. So it's really just, we just had our 1 year anniversary. So it's not, I had been a nurse for 3 years when I started doing it. Thank you.
And I tell this to nurses everywhere, right? I tell them, if you have a side hustle, if you have a thing that you like to do on the side, like, do it on the side. Nursing is the perfect career to have something to do on the side. At least I'm speaking for myself and, like, the majority of nurses in my personal life, so it is anecdotal, but I do know a lot of nurses work 12-hour shifts, and a lot of nurses who work 12-hour shifts work 3 days, maybe 4 days a week. And that means you have three-day weekends. That means you have 4 days off a week. So if there is something that you like to do, do it, and do it as big as you can. And I love other nurses that do this, right? Tina does a podcast. I do my YouTube show and all my Instagram stuff. So I really appreciate when nurses, you know, take their creative stuff, take their other passions outside of nursing, like the actual day-to-day nursing. Do you have, I have to ask, good nurse, bad nurse, do you have a favorite story you've ever covered? Or do you have a story that every time you think about you get the goosies? Like, is there a one story that pops up that is just like, I cannot believe?
Well, one of my favorite episodes is actually the first episode that Sam and I ever did, when the nurse that actually started off doing the first like 6 or 7 episodes with me, is the story of, I'm going to forget her name now, but her name is Kristen, and I can't think of her last name, but she's, if you Google nurses who kill their patients, she's probably going to come up in the very top of the list.
Of course.
She had just a really bizarre kind of like background and things that kind of led up to, and there are a lot of podcasts who have done her story, not medical podcasts, but just true crime podcasts. And it's one of the reasons that I thought that I wanted to do a podcast on just medical, because when I heard her story, I thought, wonder if there's others, and then I started trying to look for them. But she, that episode that we did is so funny, because we didn't know what we were doing, so we just had like this recorder, this like external recorder, just sitting in the middle. But we were having so much fun, and Sam and I just have a really good rapport back and forth, so we just laughed the entire time. And I can remember just talking about her. One of the funniest things was when we were talking about how she wanted to cause a code so that the security guard, because the security guards would always come to help with compressions, and she liked the security guard. So she would give the patient inject something into their IV to cause them to code so that she would have the security guard.
My God.
I know. It's terrible. And so Sam and I, and so like
that's
I said.
That's how you pick up your date? That's insane.
It's terrible. And so the work that I would say, like, I want to laugh whenever something is like inappropriate and you're not supposed to laugh. And so the thing that struck me so funny is Sam and I were just like, what in the world? Can you just imagine this? And I said, you know, people were probably like, oh my gosh, Kristen's got her makeup on. Somebody go get the code card.
Yo! That is so true, though. At some point, you got to pick up. Why does she look so nice with her new scrubs? Get close to that code card.
Yeah.
That is insane. Oh, my God. I got to go listen to that. That's hilarious. That's so fun. I mean, so obviously you hear us laughing, but you got to listen to the podcast to get the context. Obviously, it's sad, sad situations, but that's what the entire podcast is about. So you guys have to please, please go listen to it. Any episode, it's super interesting. Just please go find one of her podcasts and go listen to it. I have a fantastic time. So you got into the podcast thing. Is this something that you hope and plan to take over all of your nursing time? Or do you just enjoy doing nursing and podcasting is something you do on the side because you have the time to do it?
Well, it's definitely a hobby that I enjoy doing that I'll continue to do. It's also something it's helped to give me a platform for subjects that are important to me. Like, for instance, someone introduced me to a pharmacist who is who works for Med Global over in Bangladesh in a refugee camp. And so I interviewed her, and I did a special episode just about the Rohingya refugee crisis. And so then we have this case coming up here in Nashville where a nurse was arrested, and I feel very passionate about that. So it's sort of given me, I guess, a passion for trying to help people and bring awareness. So I really would I could see a time at some point. I don't think I ever want to not do bedside nursing, but I could see a time where I might want to go to like maybe a PRN status and work some at the work less at the hospital and do more
of this
just so that I can work in that capacity where I can bring awareness to issues that need to be talked about.
Have you, this is just a crazy question, have you ever thought about getting into politics?
Oh, that would be probably like if nursing was, you know, didn't work out, that would probably be my second passion. Like
Wait, are you serious?
Oh, I love politics.
I really think that you should.
Yeah.
You should run for something. School council.
Oh,
I don't know what they do in Nashville. Whatever. I don't know, Tina. You've got just that right mindset for just moving the people forward. I love it. But perfect segue. Obviously, this is what you do because that was a perfect segue, Tina. The nurse that got arrested. Can we talk about that? First, just tell us what happened, because this is something I've talked about multiple times. But when I say talk about, I really mean looking at the camera and talking to myself. Mm-hmm. And I've heard many different things about the situation. So why don't you just tell us the background situation of this nurse that got arrested, and then we can go from there.
Okay, so what happened is a nurse working at Vanderbilt University, her name is Redonda Vaught, mm-hmm. She was working in neurocritical care, and this is all the information coming directly from the CMS report, and anyone can go on Google and look it up, the CMS report, and you can read all of the details of what happened, but this is this comes directly from that report and an investigation, a formal investigation that was done. But Redonda was working as what's considered a help all nurse on a neurocritical care unit at Vanderbilt University. And she was asked by a nurse to take medication down to that nurse's patient in radiology because her patient was needing a PET scan and the patient was getting anxious and was not wanting to go into the machine. And so she needed something to kind of help relax her so she could get her scan. So Redonda went into the Pyxis to pull out Versed, which the doctor had ordered. So she went into, she had a orientee with her that was kind of following her around. And so she went into the Pyxis, she typed in VE, and the medications that start with VE came up. She chose, rather than choosing Versed, which probably wouldn't have come up in the Pyxis because that is a brand name, and they are usually generic names that come up, but Vecuronium, which is a paralytic. It's a medication that's given to patients when we're going to intubate them because it paralyzes the muscles and including the diaphragm, which is obviously the muscle we use to breathe.
Helps you breathe, yeah.
Yeah. So she pulled out Vecuronium. She reconstituted it and took it down to radiology. The patient was in a room that's sort of like a holding type room because when they were waiting for someone to come down and administer the medication. And then once the Versed is administered, they wait about 30 minutes for it to kind of kick in. Then they come get the patient and put her through the scan. So she administered the medicine and she had another task that she was supposed to be doing. She was supposed to go on down to the emergency room to do something like insert an NG tube or a Foley or something like that. So she administered the medicine. There are not computers down there. In order for her to be able to pull up that patient's medical record and scan the patient's armband, scan the medication, and all of those safety checks that are in place at the bedside that aren't down in radiology. And so she administered the medicine and then left, went on down to the ER. And in the meantime, the patient was not able to breathe because her diaphragm stopped working. All of her muscles stopped working. She couldn't move. She couldn't talk. She was aware of what's going on because it doesn't sedate you. It doesn't make you unaware, but she couldn't breathe. And so she became unresponsive. A transporter somehow saw her and didn't think she looked right and went in and checked on her, called a code blue. They came, they coded her, they received ROSC, but then was not able to
keep her.
Yeah, they had to put her on a ventilator and send her back to the ICU, but she was no longer aware. She was alert and oriented before, and talking, and she had had an aneurysm, and that's the reason that she was in the hospital to begin with, a bleed, but she was alert, oriented, functioning. And so when this happened, she never regained consciousness, and they eventually, I think a couple of days later, had to pull all of the life support, and she passed. And so Redonda was fired when the hospital, I guess, investigated it. They realized it at the bedside. Another nurse saw the vial that had been used to administer the medication, and they said, "Is this what you gave her?" And she said, "Yes." And that's when they realized that she had given Vecuronium instead of Versed. So she was fired in January. That happened in December of 2017. She was fired in January. She started working at Centennial Medical Center, another hospital in Nashville. She worked there for several months. The nursing board investigated and determined that she did not need to she should not lose her license based on this event. It was a medication error. And while it was horrible, horrible, and just a complete tragedy, and she will never get over it herself, they determined that she did not need to lose her license. And so they didn't pull her license. Then at some point in October, I guess Medicaid and Medicare came to investigate. They did a full investigation, wrote up the report. Vanderbilt was going to lose their funding, their Medicaid and Medicare funding, because of this event. And Vanderbilt had to make some changes. They have not disclosed what those changes were. But then based on this report, the CMS report, the district attorney, I don't know how, somehow got a hold of this report and saw that this nurse overrode a safety mechanism. So when she pulled out the Vecuronium, she had to have hit override. It didn't let her just pull it out. So she hit override. And because she did that, the only reason that I've ever seen the district attorney give for why they're bringing charges, criminal charges against her. But because she hit the override option and then just went ahead and skipped over that safety feature, she's charged with reckless homicide and felony neglect of an elderly person or something like that. And she's facing 12 to 20 years in prison.
That's insane. That's insane. So I need to know. So thank you. That was the most, yes, thank you for letting us know what happened. What are your feelings about this? Where do you come when you look at this? Why are you so invested in this situation?
Well, the reason I'm so invested in the situation is I feel like it affects nurses everywhere.
Before you continue, I say invested because Tina and I had quickly talked about this prior, and she said that you've been to the hearings,
yes,
the court hearings for the nurse. So why? Why do you feel like it's so important that you go? Like, why are you invested?
Well, for me, the way that I look at this, her decision to override the medication is something that nurses do all across this country, at hospitals all across
the country.
All day,
every day. Literally, yes. All day, every day. Like, when a doctor puts in a new order and it just doesn't go through to the Pyxis and you need to give a med, you override the med because the patient needs the med. I mean, it happens every single day.
All the time in emergent and non-emergent situations. There's no reason. Someone should have stepped up. Someone at Vanderbilt should have stepped up and said, wait, you shouldn't prosecute her for this, because if you prosecute her, you're going to have to prosecute all these other nurses, because everybody does this. But Vanderbilt doesn't want to do that, because then that's their whole reason. That's what they're saying is, well, we had a safety mechanism in place and then she overrode it. So this all happened because they were losing their funding, and their excuses, well, but she overrode the safety mechanism, the safety feature. We do this all the time. This is part of nursing. It's a system problem. And there was a problem with the way that nursing is set up at Vanderbilt and at hospitals all across this country, because we do this all the time. If we're going to be held criminally accountable when we override medications, then how about everybody stop overriding medications? What would happen then?
Exactly.
The hospitals would basically shut down, because the way the system is set up right now, you can't function, you can't do your job if you don't override medications. And everybody knows that. Everybody knows it.
I mean, the reality of the situation is, if we honestly decided to stop overriding medication, when my patient who has chest pain, who doesn't have any nitro ordered, who just came to the hospital, who doesn't have any morphine ordered, who have zero orders, and I decided, you know what, let me wait until the system says I can take the medication out without the override, that patient's going to die. Many patients are going to die if we don't override. And I understand it's a complicated situation. And the thing that frustrates me the most about this story, I haven't kept up nearly as much as you, Tina, but I have kept up a little. And the fact, like you said, Vanderbilt fired her, and she was working as a nurse because the nursing board okayed it. They said that it wasn't her fault. Like, she could keep her license. It's her fault, but she could keep her license. She does not need to lose her license. It bothers me that Vanderbilt all of a sudden said, you know what, let's put all the blame on her the second their funding was involved.
Yeah.
But before the funding was involved, they were like, all right, she doesn't work for us, whatever. The second the funding gets involved, nope, zero blame was Vanderbilt. It was all the nurse's fault, which is super, 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 super frustrating. Can you give us an update? Do you know where they are in the proceedings? What's the situation? What it's looking out to be? Does she look like she's going to be a free nurse? Is she going to get, like, do you know what the situation is currently?
Unfortunately, yes, I do. She's been through a couple of hearings. She pled not guilty, of course. She's not guilty of reckless homicide. She's not guilty of neglect, felony neglect of an elderly person. So she pled not guilty to that. And they are having these discussion hearings now, where the prosecution and the defense are putting forward all of their evidence. And the next discussion hearing is set for June 27th at 9 a.m. And then I believe at that hearing, a trial date will be set. And so then she'll have to face a trial. It's ridiculous.
This is insane, Dina. This is insane.
Just the fact that she's being charged.
With the charges that they put up? Reckless homicide? Mm-hmm. Like, is that real? Like, that's... Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah. And my thing is, Q, when Joy Behar made the comment about the doctor's stethoscope.
Stethoscope. Yeah.
Nurses got so mad all over the country when Senator Walsh made the comment about playing cards. All those things are frustrating to nurses because they feel misunderstood and they feel like nobody understands what their role is and what they do or how valuable they are. And it can be frustrating, but over 600,000 nurses jumped onto a Facebook group for nurses with cards after that happened. And those people, that's a very active group now. They get on there and they talk about all kinds of things all the time. Some things are important, some aren't. They're just kind of like, it's just a place to go and chat with other nurses. Same thing with Show Me Your Stethoscope. Janie Harvey started that, and there's over 600,000 nurses in that group. I will say this about that group. That group does amazing things. In fact, they are supporting Redonda Vaught. They have helped to raise over $90,000 for her defense fund in a GoFundMe account. It's a wonderful organization. So I want to definitely give them a shout out. But my thing is, why are more people not absolutely throwing a fit over this? Because everybody threw a big fit and everybody was posting about it, memes, everything. Just, I posted about it. I was mad about it too, about the card situation. But we better be mad about this. This is serious because it will affect you personally. You make decisions every day at your job, and you decide what to do and what not to do. And if at some point you make a decision that costs somebody their life and you intended to do the right thing, but you just made the mistake, made the wrong decision, you could be charged criminally for it. You could go to prison. Is that what you want? I mean, why are we not all absolutely mad about this and doing something?
I'm telling you, Tina, I don't know when, I don't know how, but you need to be mayor of somewhere. You need to get into politics, girl. You need to do it. I mean, you were born with it. You were born with it. But I agree with you 1,000%. It's a scary situation. And it really is. This is one of them situations where it could literally happen to any nurse. It's not like, oh, it's like one of those rare situations. No, this could happen to any nurse anywhere. Like literally every single day this happens. Mm-hmm. It's nuts. Thank you so much for coming on, Tina. I really appreciate it. And I'm sorry about all the technical issues. But before I go, please, I want you to plug away. Where can people find you? Where can people listen to your podcast? Where can people get any information about Tina that they need?
You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. We have a website, goodnursebadnurse.com. And our episodes are on there. We have... My husband does the website, so he always wants me to talk about that. But we're on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, all pretty much anywhere you can find a podcast.
Good for you. And like I say, you guys, you got to go reach out to her. I always say this only when it's true. The only reason that Tina and I are connecting is because I reached out to, I don't know if it was me DMing her or me messaging her, but the moral of the story is she responds. Whenever you reach out to her, she responds. So if there's specific questions you have about the case that's going on right now with the Vacaronium, or if it's about Good Nurse and Bad Nurse, or if there's a story you want her to cover, literally just reach out to her, because that's the only reason this is happening. That's the only reason I was able to get on her podcast. And she's super open about everything. I mean, you heard the podcast today. I mean, the video today is just talking about everything from when she was born till to this case that she's invested in. So Tina, you really are good people. You really are good people. For nurses out there, Tina's the kind of nurse I'd like to be one day. But thank you. I really appreciate this. And don't forget to like and subscribe. Catch you guys later.